Hello, and welcome to the Lying Media Bastards radio show.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living room. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to ride. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Well, now, what have we here?
See, I got a ball of lip for property, so I slip my beanie on sloppily and promenade out to take up a collection. I got game like I read the directions. I'm wishing that I had an automobile as I feel the cold wind rush past. But let me state that I'm a hustler for real, so you know I got the stolen bus pass. Just as the bus pulls up and I step to the rhythm, so lady looked like she drank a 40 or 50. I see my old school partner say his brother got popped. Pay my respects, can you ring the bell? We came to my stop. The street light reflects off the piss on the ground, which reflects off the hamburger sign that turns round, which reflects off the chrome of the BMW, which reflects off the fact that I'm broke. Now what the fuck is new? I need new. I spot the motherfucker in the tweet suit. I'm in his ass quicker than a kick from a grease boot. Eased up slow in the street. Could tell he was suspicious by the way he slid his feet. Didn't want to fuck up the come up, so I smiled with my eyes, said, hey, how's it hanging, guy? Bumped into his shoulder, but he passed with no reaction. Then this motherfucker had hella Andrew Jacksons. I'm a thief, a pickpocket, give a fuck what you call it. Used to call him fat cats, I just call him Wallace. Getting federal, ain't just a klepto. MasterCard and Visa, I gladly accept those. Sneaky motherfucker with a scam, know how to pull it. Got a mirror in my pocket, but that won't stop no bullets. Story just begun, but you already know. Ain't no need to get down, shit, I'm already low. In the darkness, my teeth clenched tight like a fist in the cold sharpness. I look down and I hear my stomach growling. Step to Burger King to attack it like a Shaolin. I never pay for shit that I can get by doing dirt. Linger to the girl cashier and start to flirt. All up in her face and her breath was like murder. Damn the shit I do for a free hamburger.
Well, you got my number, you gonna call me tonight?
It depends, it's them burgers attached to a price. I'm just kidding, I'ma call, even write you love letters. Thanks for the burgers, hook me up with a Dr. Pepper.
That's cool, you want some ice?
Yeah, and some fries would be hella nice.
Damn, my manager is coming, play it off, okay? Have a nice day.
I'm about to hear anyway. I use peoples before they use me. Cause you could get got by a Uzi over OZ. That's what a OG told me. Got to find someplace warm and cozy to eat the vittles that I just got. Came to an underground parking lot. This place is good as any. Fuck it, it's all good. Walked in, found a car, hopped and set up on the hood. Ate my burger, threw back my cola. Somebody said, hey, it was a rent a pig. I thought it was a roller. Want me to call the cops? I don't want them to see me. Looked down, saw that I was sitting on a Lamborghini. It was roses, Ferraris, and Jags by the dozen. A building door open. Damn, it was my cousin. Getting off of work, dressed up, no lie. Tux, cummerbund, and a black bow tie. Was like, hey, me. said, right, what was up in there, though? And a light bulb went off in my head. They be thinking all black folks is resembling. Give me your tux and I do some pocket smelling. Finna change in the bathroom and I freeze off my nuts. Let's take a short break while I get into this tux. Damn. Alright, I'm ready. Like a million bucks, I'll be the flyest motherfucker in the Afro in a tux. My arm is at a right angle up, silver tray in my hand. May I interest you in some caviar, ma'am? My eye shoots round the room there and here, noticing the diamonds in the chandelier. Background Barry Manilow, Copacabana, and a strong ass scent of stogies from Havana. What no place where a brother might been. Snobby old ladies drinking champagne with rich white men. Alright then, let's begin this. Nights like this is good for business. 5 minutes in the mix, notice several different clicks talking. Giggling and shit with one motherfucker can be twits and everybody else jacking him, throttling. Found out later he on Coca-Cola bottling. Talking to a black man, who's he confused? Me looking hella bougie, ass all tight and sedity. Recognize him as the mayor of my city who treats young black men like Frank Nitty. Mr. Coke said to Mr. Mayor, you know we got a process like Ice-T's here. We put up the funds for your election campaign. And oh, waiter, can you bring the champagne? Our real estate fund says opportunities arousing to make some condos out of low-income housing immediately. We need some media heat to say that gangs run the speed and then we bring in the police fleet. Harass and beat everybody till they look inebriated. When we buy the land, motherfuckers will appreciate it. Don't worry about the Urban League or Jesse Jackson. My man that owns Marlboro donated a fat sum. That's when I step back some to contemplate what you know. Sat down, wrestle with my thoughts like a sumo. Ain't no one player that could beat this lunacy. Ain't no hustler on the street could do a whole community. This is how deep shit could get. It reads macaroni on my birth certificate. Putting Tang is my middle name, but I can't hang. I'm getting hustled, only knowing half the gang. Shit, what the fuck I give about this place?
Yeah. words are very unnecessary. They can only do harm.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Lying Bitty Bastards radio show. I'm Jake, and I sound funny in the headphones. I don't know what's going on. That just there. God damn, that was a good song. And I have a phone call. Let me put on some music. I'm sorry, folks, that was a call on very serious radio business. Later in the show, actually after the show, I want to get you all your huge amount of music and politics. There's a big protest going on at UCSD right now that is trying to demand that the university divest from the Sudan all of their investments. As you know, many universities have lots and lots of cash. And go ahead and they invest that cash in various businesses and ventures and whatnot. And as you know, as I hope you know, in the Darfur region of the Sudan, there's a really awful human rights catastrophe going on. The genocide, basically. The folks living there by government sanctioned or government turn of the blind eye anyway, and militias from another part of the nation. So big protest going on, trying to get the school to take their money out of investments regarding the Sudan as a way to try to pressure the government into not being genocidal bastards. So later in the, I guess probably shortly after the show, maybe I'll keep the recording going and add that into the podcast. The interview with some of the protesters. But that song I just played a moment ago, dope, was Hot Chip, I think was the name of the band. God damn it. Yes, Hot Chip, with a song called Playboy. I downloaded a song of theirs. I downloaded that song, honestly, maybe a month or two ago, and thought, wow, this is a good song. And I stuck it onto the old MP3 player, in a little folder that I set aside for songs to play on the show. And after that, then there was... I sort of forgot what it was. Forgot what it sounded like. So I never played it. Then today, just sort of, hey, let me try that song again. Bam. Musical excellence. And I still don't know why the headphones are so weird. I'm sorry. That's not very entertaining for you, the listener, hearing Jake discuss headphone volume. Before that, I played Failure, the band, covering Depeche Mode, covering their song Enjoy the Silence. Before that, we had The Coup, doing Fat Cat's Big a Fish. Then we had my intro song, and if you were listening before I started the show, we were actually playing a track by Bakunin's Bum, which is a joint project of two bands whose names I've forgotten. But they put out an album that combined string music, you know, violins, cellos, that sort of thing, with some sort of semi-industrial beats, and then with audio from protests and speeches up in Ontario. There's an organization called the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, which does a lot of great direct action work trying to get the city to take care of the homeless population there. I remember at one point they actually went into some government offices dealing with the homeless, that when the offices were refusing to do anything, they went in and they evicted the people at the homeless office and literally started taking all their furniture and filing cabinets and whatnot and throwing them out on the street to make a point. And I thought that was hell cool. I'm Jake, Lying Media Bastard Show. Again, the sound is not sounding quite right to me. Maybe there's something wrong with the headphones. Maybe I'm going crazy. Let's go with the crazy route. Plenty of music on the show. Going to be playing some, I can play some Dramarama Go Team Coil. Got to play at least one song from Coil. It turns out I was sort of a fan of the band Coil. Industrial band, experimental. I liked what the sort of stuff that they did. Some of it, anyway. Some of it was a little bit too experimental for my taste. But I just learned last week that the one of the members of the band died in 2004. I just discovered this 2006, so as a very belated tribute, I have to play at least one Coil song on the show. And you'll know us by the Trail of Dead, gonna play some Dresden Dolls, The Flesh, and so much other stuff. Also gonna play, it was Martin Luther King Day on Monday. I edited down what I think is one of his most profound speeches, known as the Beyond Vietnam speech. Which, you know, maybe it's blasphemous, but I edited out a lot of the portions of the speech that were very topical and very timely. You know, a lot of stuff he's discussing actual events going on in Vietnam, which hard to relate to at the moment. So I took out some of that and just focused on sort of the underlying principles of peace work, of activism, nonviolence, and revolution. These sort of things. So I'll be playing some of that. Now, what am I going to have for you next? Oh, I need to pick a song before we can play something next. Let us go with... okay. Just downloaded this song by this band yesterday. Called The Pri. Spelled P-R-I-X. So you get that French pronunciation like Grand Prix. I don't know why I made a... I gotta stop everything. I just said Grand Prix, attempting a French accent, but that sounded kind of Scottish. But yeah, it's P-R-I-X, and I was concerned when I first downloaded the track. Are they gonna go with the French pronunciation and call themselves The Pri? Or maybe it's sort of a play on swear words. Maybe they're called The Pricks, but they spell it with an X to be extra cool. Okay, I'm going to shut up. I'm feeling like an idiot, and I'm going to stop, and we'll play music, and maybe I'll go take my brain medicine, and I'll feel better.
is falling away from me.
Folks, listening to Radioactive San Diego in San Diego. I'm Jake, Lying Mitty Bastards Radio Show. That was Korn doing Falling Away From Me. Before that, we had, who did we have? Anti-Flag doing a live version of A New Kind of Army. And we started off with The Pre doing Shoot Out the Lights. I think at this point in the show, I'm going to play the Martin Luther King speech that I was talking about. And, this is the Beyond Vietnam speech. I believe he gave it in 1967. Now, King had been obviously a member of the civil rights movement for many years, and many folks thought that it was wrong of him to be speaking out against the war. Saw them as two different issues. The anti-war movement and the civil rights movement were two different things, and that if he started talking about the war, it was going to get some negative publicity, turn people against the civil rights movement. It was going to divide their forces. Some people thought they really needed to focus on civil rights and leave these other issues on the side. But Dr. King said, well, no, it's all part of a greater thing, and my principles tell me that I cannot talk about just this one issue. This is a human issue. Civil rights is a human issue. War is a human issue. Poverty is a human issue. And I got to talk about them all. Got to fight for them all. So, I'll leave you the speech here. I think I'm going to be a little on the profane side. I'm actually going to try playing some background music in there. Unfortunately, while obviously the wording of the speech is excellent and he brings up a lot of powerful points, he does not deliver the speech with sort of the I have a dream sort of passion that we're all used to. So, as well, I'm sure you think, well, geez, you don't need to put music behind this guy. I know. I'm good anyway, because. So this is about a 20-minute speech. I cut it down from about 60, and it's good stuff. So I'm Jake, Lying Media Bastard. Do you want to read some political stuff, go to my site, lyingmediabastards.com. But maybe just listen while this is going on. Focus on the words.
A few years ago, there was a shining moment in that struggle. It seemed as if there was a real promise of hope for the poor, both black and white, through the poverty program. There were experiments, hopes, new beginnings. Then came the build-up in Vietnam. And I watched this program broken and eviscerated, as if it was some idle political plaything of a society gone mad on war. And I knew that America would never invest the necessary funds or energies in rehabilitation of its poor, so long as adventures like Vietnam continued to draw men and skills and money like some demonic destructive suction tube. So I was increasingly compelled to see the war as an enemy of the poor and to attack it as such. Perhaps a more tragic recognition of reality took place when it became clear to me that the war was doing far more than devastating the hopes of the poor at home. It was sending their sons and their brothers and their husbands to fight and to die in extraordinarily high proportions relative to the rest of the population. We were taking the black young men who had been crippled by our society and sending them 8,000 miles away to guarantee liberties in Southeast Asia, which they had not found in Southwest Georgia and East Holland. And so we have been repeatedly faced with the cruel irony of watching Negro and white boys on TV screens as they kill and die together for a nation that has been unable to seat them together in the same schools. And so we watched them in brutal solidarity, burning the huts of a poor village. But we realized that they would hardly live on the same block in Chicago. I could not be silent in the face of such cruel manipulation of the poor. My third reason moves to an even deeper level of awareness, for it grows out of my experience in the ghettos of the North over the last 3 years, especially the last three summers. As I have walked among the desperate, rejected, and angry young men, I have told them that Molotov cocktails and rifles would not solve their problems. I have tried to offer them my deepest compassion while maintaining my conviction that social change comes most meaningfully through nonviolent action. But they ask, and rightly so, what about Vietnam? They ask if our own nation wasn't using massive doses of violence to solve its problems, to bring about the changes it wanted. Their questions hit home, and I knew that I could never again raise my voice against the violence of the oppressed in the ghettos without having first spoken clearly to the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government. For the sake of those boys, for the sake of this government, for the sake of the hundreds of thousands trembling under our violence, I cannot be silent. These are the times for real choices and not false ones. We are at the moment when our lives must be placed on the line if our nation is to survive its own folly. Every man of humane convictions must decide on the protest that best suits his convictions. But we must all protest. Now that is something seductively tempting about stopping there and sending us all off on what in some circles has become a popular crusade against the war in Vietnam. I say we must enter that struggle, but I wish to go on now to say something even more disturbing. The war in Vietnam is but a symptom of a far deeper malady within the American spirit. And if we ignore this sobering reality, we will find ourselves organizing clergy and layman concern committees for the next generation. They will be concerned about Guatemala and Peru. They will be concerned about Thailand and Cambodia. They will be concerned about Mozambique and South Africa. We will be marching for these and a dozen other names and attending rallies without end unless there is a significant and profound change in American life and policy. Such thoughts take us beyond Vietnam, but not beyond our calling as sons of the living God. In 1957, a sensitive American official overseas said that it seemed to him that our nation was on the wrong side of a world revolution. During the past 10 years, we have seen emerge a pattern of suppression which has now justified the presence of U.S. military advisors in Venezuela. This need to maintain social stability for our investments accounts for the counter-revolutionary action of American forces in Guatemala. It tells why American helicopters are being used against guerrillas in Cambodia and why American napalm and green beret forces have already been active against rebels in Peru. It is with such activity in mind that the words of the late John F. Kennedy come back to haunt us. 5 years ago, he said, "Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable." Increasingly, by choice or by accident, this is the role our nation has taken, the role of those who make peaceful revolution impossible by refusing to give up the privileges and the pleasures that come from the immense profits of overseas investments. I am convinced that if we are to get on the right side of the world revolution, we as a nation must undergo a radical revolution of values. We must rapidly begin the shift from a thing-oriented society to a person-oriented society. When machines and computers, profit motives and property rights are considered more important than people, the giant triplets of racism, extreme materialism, and militarism are incapable of being conquered. A true revolution of values will soon cause us to question the fairness and justice of many of our past and present policies. On the one hand, we are called to play the Good Samaritan on life's roadside, but that will be only an initial act. One day we must come to see that the whole Jericho Road must be transformed so that men and women will not be constantly beaten and robbed as they make their journey on life's highway. True compassion is more than flinging a coin to a beggar. It comes to see that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring. True revolution of values will soon look uneasily on the glaring contrast of poverty and wealth. With righteous indignation, it will look across the seas and see individual capitalists of the West investing huge sums of money in Asia, Africa, and South America, only to take the profits out with no concern for the social betterment of the countries and say this is not just. It will look at our alliance with the landed gentry of South America and say this is not just. The Western arrogance of feeling that it has everything to teach others and nothing to learn from them is not just. A true revolution of values will lay hand on the world order and say of war, this way of settling differences is not just. This business of burning human beings with napalm, of filling our nation's homes with orphans and widows, of injecting poisonous drugs of hate into the veins of peoples normally humane, of sending men home from dark and bloody battlefields physically handicapped and psychologically deranged cannot be reconciled with wisdom, justice, and love. A nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. America, the richest and most powerful nation in the world, can well lead the way in this revolution of values. That is nothing except a tragic death wish. to prevent us from reordering our priorities so that the pursuit of peace will take precedence over the pursuit of war. There's nothing to keep us from molding a recalcitrant status quo with bruised hands until we have fashioned it into a brotherhood. These are days which demand wise restraint and calm reasonableness. These are revolutionary times. All over the globe, men are revolting against old systems of exploitation and oppression. And out of the wombs of a frail world, new systems of justice and equality are being born. The shirtless and barefoot people of the land are rising up as never before. The people who in darkness have seen a great light. We in the West must support these revolutions. It is a sad fact that because of comfort, complacency, a morbid fear of communism, and our proneness to adjust to injustice, the Western nations that initiated so much of the revolutionary spirit of the modern world have now become the arch anti-revolutionaries. This has driven many to feel that only Marxism has a revolutionary spirit. Therefore, communism is a judgment against our failure to make democracy real and follow through on the revolutions that we initiated. Our only hope today lies in our ability to recapture the revolutionary spirit and go out into a sometimes hostile world, declaring eternal hostility to poverty, racism, and militarism. With this powerful commitment, we shall boldly challenge the status quo and unjust mores, and thereby speed the day when every valley shall be exalted and every mountain and hill shall be made low, and the crooked shall be made straight and the rough places plain. A genuine revolution of values means, in the final analysis, that our loyalties must become ecumenical rather than sectional. Every nation must now develop an overriding loyalty to mankind as a whole in order to preserve the best in their individual societies. This call for worldwide fellowship that lifts neighborly concern beyond one's tribe, race, class, and nation is in reality a call for an all-embracing and unconditional love for all mankind. This oft misunderstood, this oft misinterpreted concept, so readily dismissed by the Nietzsches of the world as a weak and cowardly force, has now become an absolute necessity for the survival of man. When I speak of love, I'm not speaking of some sentimental and weak response. I'm not speaking of that force which is just emotional bosh. I'm speaking of that force which all of the great religions have seen as the supreme unifying principle of life. Love is somehow the key that unlocks the door which leads to ultimate reality. This Hindu, Muslim, Christian, Jewish, Buddhist belief about ultimate reality is beautifully summed up in the first epistle of St. John. Let us love one another, for love is God. And everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God. He that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love. If we love one another, God dwelleth in us, and his love is perfected in us. Let us hope that this spirit will become the order of the day. We can no longer afford to worship the God of hate, or bow before the altar of retaliation. The oceans of history are made turbulent by the ever-rising tides of hate. History is cluttered with the wreckage of nations and individuals that pursued this self-defeating path of hate. As Arnold Toynbee says, love is the ultimate force that makes for the saving choice of life and good against the damning choice of death and evil. Therefore, the first hope in our inventory must be the hope that love is going to have the last word, unquote. We are now faced with the fact, my friends, that tomorrow is today. We are confronted with the fierce urgency of now. In this unfolding conundrum of life and history, that is such a thing as being too late. Procrastination is still the thief of time. Life often leaves us standing bare, naked, and dejected with a lost opportunity. The tide in the affairs of men does not remain at flood, it ebbs. We may cry out desperately for time to pause in her passage, but time is adamant to every plea and rushes on. Over the bleached bones and jumble residues of numerous civilizations are written the pathetic words, too late. That is an invisible book of life that faithfully records our vigilance or our neglect. Omar Khayyam is right, the moving finger writes, and having writ moves on. We still have a choice today. Nonviolent coexistence, a violent co-annihilation. We must move past indecision to action. We must find new ways to speak for peace in Vietnam and justice throughout the developing world, a world that borders on our doors. If we do not act, we shall surely be dragged down the long, dark, and shameful corridors of time, reserved for those who possess power without compassion, might without morality, and strength without sight. Now let us begin. Now let us rededicate ourselves to the long and bitter but beautiful struggle for a new world. This is the calling of the sons of God, and our brothers wait eagerly for our response. Shall we say the odds are too great? Shall we tell them the struggle is too hard? Will our message be that the forces of American life militate against their arrival as full men, and we send our deepest regrets? Or will there be another message of longing, of hope, of solidarity with their yearnings, of commitment to their cause, whatever the cost? The choice is ours, and though we might prefer it otherwise, we must choose in this crucial moment of human history.
Hey folks, you're listening to Lying Media Bastards Radio Show. That was just Martin Luther King Jr. giving a speech about... it's called the Beyond Vietnam speech. He gave that one April 4th, 1967 at a meeting of clergy and laity. What was the meeting? What's the organization called? Clergy and Laity Concerned at Riverside Church in New York City. It's a much longer speech. I cut it down and I'll be arrogant. I put in the good parts. I left the good parts and cut the bad parts of Martin Luther King's speech because I know better. But no, one thing obviously in the speech that you know moves me is that obviously that you know King originally was focused on the civil rights movement, on changing American government and culture so that African Americans were treated as human beings rather than whatever you want to call that status before, secondhand citizens, or whatever. But he talks about how he was, his commitment to nonviolent resistance as a tactic for his movement, pretty much changed his mind about, the Vietnam War. Felt that he could not remain silent when he was so opposed to violence, seeing his own country, you know, export, I forget what, heavy doses, I think was the phrase he used, of violence. And when he saw young people and he'd tell them, you know, very angry young people living in the ghettos, he's saying, you know, okay, well, I understand you're angry, but, you know, violence is wrong, don't use it. And he said, well, what about our government? Our government's using it. Our country's using it. Why can't we use it? And that led him to change his mind. a lot of folks out there, you couldn't change their minds about anything. They're so set in their ways. So I have to have some respect for somebody who can take in new information, new insights, and transform how they feel and act. Now, to me, but more than that, the most important part is something that really speaks to me. I've been thinking to myself for a while, why exactly do I do what I do? I do this radio show, I'm talking about politics, I'm writing on my website, I'm writing articles for other publications. Why? I do feel that the world is in such a terrible state that immediate, drastic action must be taken on all sorts of levels. If we want things to be better, if we want things not to get worse, you know, take your pick, a lot of ways of phrasing it. Yet, I'm spending my time writing this stuff. Why am I doing that? And, where's his phrase here? He says, what's this quote that he starts off with where he says that, he mentions some other military officer who says that he fears that America is on the wrong side of a world revolution. That at the time, countries all over the world overthrowing the dictators, setting up their new governments, frequently communist governments. But that he's not so concerned about the communist part. He's all, look, these people are fighting for their freedom, and we're opposing that. You know, we're saying, well, you know, you want to set up your own government, but you want your government to be communist? No, we're gonna stop you and kill you. That's the U.S. response. So he says, you know, I'm afraid we're on the wrong side of a positive thing. The United States is on the force of evil in all this, rather than the force of good. And that people who oppose this, these revolutions, people who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. And he talks about how the U.S. needs the change. And you need this radical change in values. Which, and that's sort of coming down to, I think, why I do what I do. It's this belief that, you know, looking around at American culture, my fellow Americans, all that, a lot of stuff's just wrong. You know, apart from the obvious stuff of the, you know, the, some people, not everybody, you know, falls into, you know, the racism, sexism, homophobia and arrogance a lot of feelings like that, a lot of actions like that. There's that, but on top of that, there's sort of those are only bits of the culture. But everybody, you know, like the United States, there is this arrogance that we're the best country in the world and we don't have to listen to anyone. It doesn't matter what other countries want or need. We don't care. We think we've got it figured out. And then on top of that, we've got you know, that just the American greed and comfort and opulence, this feeling that, you know, even if you're just a working class American, you got yourself, you know, an apartment and a car and somehow, you know, some clothes and, you know, a refrigerator full of food. That's a hell of a lot more than most people in this world are going to have. And yet we feel that this level of convenience and of comfort that if other people have to suffer for it in other countries, first of all, we don't notice it. But my fear, why I do what I do, my fear is that when faced with that reality, somebody saying, you know, my comfort comes at the expense of millions of people, maybe I need to give that up. If the folks around me in this country, if they're willing to do that, then I'm okay, then I'm doing the right thing with my writing. I'm telling people, I'm trying to get them to think and change their minds and be open to these new ways of living or new ways of thinking or pointing out things that need to be changed, whether it's in your own life or in, you know, the system or institutions or whatnot. But my fear is that Americans won't care, that you can't make them care, that they feel that they own this. This is their this comfort or luxury or whatever level they might have in their life, that they own that that's theirs, it's their right. And if other people have to suffer, then they don't care. Well, fuck them. So, and if that's the case, then America truly is on the wrong side of everything. And the people who oppose the United States are on the side of justice, and the U.S. is against the side of justice. And, I don't know. I guess I'm not willing to. I'm hoping that that's wrong. I'm hoping that we can turn the tide. There's enough good folks in America that we can put ourselves on the right road. That we can be on the right side of revolutions and battles and struggles. And that people have the goodness in their hearts to want to do those things. And if that's the case, then I'm going to keep on writing and speaking and trying to get people to sort of raise the numbers of Americans that are on that level. And if I'm proven wrong at some point, then you got to choose sides, I suppose. And that's something I really don't want to have to do. Anyhow, I've rambled. Martin rambled, but in an eloquent fashion. Nice rant. But, so yeah, I'm done talking. I'm gonna play some music. This here is A Tribe Called Quest. And, yeah, Radioactive San Diego.
Days when I was a teenager, before I had status and before I had a pager. You can find the abstract listening to hip hop. My pops used to say it reminded him of bebop. I said, well, daddy, don't you know that things go in cycles? Way the Bobby Brown is just amping like Michael. It's all expected, things are for the looking. If you got the money, Quest is for the booking. Come on, everybody, let's get with the fly mode. Still got room on the truckload of black gold. Listen to the rhyme to get a mental picture of this black man, black woman picture. Why do I see that? Cause I gotta speak the truth, man. Doing what we feel for the music is the proof. And planet on the ground, the act is so together. Bonafide strong, you need leverage to sever. The unit, yes, the unit, yes, the unit called the Jazz is delivering each year an LP filled with street goods. You can find it on your rack in your record store. If you get the record, say your thoughts are adored and appreciated. Cause we're ever so glad we made it. We work hard, so we gotta thank God. Dishing out the plastic, do the dance till you're spastic. If you diss, it gets drastic. Listen to the rhyme, cause it's time to make gravy. If it moves your booty, then shake, shake it, baby. All the way to Africa, aka the motherland. Stick out the left, then I'll ask for the other hand. That's the right hand, black man. Only if you are noted as my man. If I get the credit, then I think I deserve it. If you fake news, don't fix your mouth to word it. Get in the zone of positivity, not negativity. Cause we gotta strive for longevity. If you buy Chuck, what's in that? What? A pair of Nike size 10 and a half. Come on, yeah. We gotta make moves. Never, ever, ever, ever fake moves. We gotta make moves. Never, ever, ever, ever fake moves. We gotta make moves. Never, ever, ever, ever fake moves. We gotta make moves. Never, ever, ever, ever fake moves.
Time is a ship on a vessel at sea. Drifting toward an average of nothingness.
All the time, can't fall prey to a hip-hop crime. With the dope raps and dope tracks, we move blocks. From the fly girlies to the hardest of the rocks. Musically, the quest is on the rise. We own these excursions, so you must realize that continually, I'll pop my Zulu. If you don't like it, get on the Zulu tip. So what can you do in the times which exist? You can't fake moves on your brother or your sis, but if your sis is a brother is a jerk, leave them both alone and continue with your work. Whatever it may be in today's society, everything is fair, at least that's how it seems to me. You must be honest and true to the next. Don't be phony and expect one not to flex. Especially if you rhyme, you have to live by the pen. Your man is your man, then treat him like your friend. Is the code of the streets. So listen to the knowledge being dropped over beats. Beats that are hard, beats that are funky. It can get you hooked like a crackhead junkie. What you gotta do is know the tribe is in the sphere. The abstract poet prominent like Shakespeare.
Running and passing, passing and running. get up in that body, but I'm all by myself. It's getting colder, baby, I'm looking for a home. I'm getting older, baby, I don't wanna die alone. Through the wrong times and the right times, I wanna be with you. All that I've ever known, I got to overthrow. My heart is open, yeah, you know I have a walking, baby, go. And it's getting worse. I got up in there, but that motherfucker got in there first. It's getting on now, baby, I don't want no one else. You do whatever, baby, don't you leave me by myself. Through the wrong times and the right times, I wanna be with you. All that I've ever known, I got to overthrow. My heart is open, yeah, you know I.
Baby, I love you.
Oh, whoa.
I wanna know.
Love is sweet, baby.
Hey, folks, you're listening to Radioactive San Diego, the Lying Media Bastards radio show. And there was Smashing Pumpkins. Remember them? Doing Shiva off of, hell, I can't remember what album that was. Off of their greatest hits album, let's say. before that, we had The Flesh doing Sweet Defeat, and Tribe Called Quest doing Excursions off of the Low End Theory album. I'm Jake. Got some media news for you. I've decided something I'm going to try to do more often is because the show's called Lying Media Bastards. Theoretically, with a title like that, every week I should just be talking about stuff that the media is getting wrong. But really, that doesn't interest me. I'd rather focus on what is right rather than I don't mean I want to focus on what the media gets right. I just want to focus on what's going on in the real world out there. Instead of saying, well, you know, CBS News said this and it's not true. I'd rather just say what is true instead of bothering to focus on what other people are getting wrong. I think it cuts out the middleman. On top of that, though, the media is a big thing. Various industries and technologies, so I like mentioning some of these things. First of all, we got Steven Soderbergh, who is a big-name director. I think he got his start. He sort of helped found the or popularize the independent film movement in the United States with a movie called "Sex, Lies, and Videotape" back in the 80s. It was stormed all the awards. I think it ended up leading to things like the Sundance Film Festival and whatnot. But he's been so successful that he can sort of do really big movies with, you know, million-dollar budgets and, you know, multi-million-dollar budgets and big-name celebrities and all that, but also do a lot of independent, small projects. Anyhow, he's got a movie that's coming out soon called Bubble, one of his low-budget films. I really don't know what it's about. But here's the interesting thing. Apparently, the day that the film comes out in the theaters, the movie is also going to be shown on cable television, and they will be selling the DVD. Now, of course, usually, when a movie is shown in the theater, it's shown exclusively in the theater. And then after that, then it comes out to the pay-per-view, you know, the pay cable TV channels, HBO and Showtime and whatnot. And then after that, then it goes to a home video, DVD and whatnot. So he's announced this. Theater chains in more than 15 states have refused to show the film, saying Soderbergh's plan will take a big chunk out of their bottom line. It's the biggest threat to the viability of the cinema industry today, John Fithian, president of the National Association of Theater Owners, said of the so-called day-and-date release strategy. As Soderbergh said a few months ago in Wired magazine, Name any big title movie that's come out in the last 4 years. It has been available in all formats the day of its release. It's called piracy. Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings, Ocean's 11, Ocean's 12. I saw them on Canal Street on opening day. Simultaneous release is already here. We're just trying to gain control over it. Now, I just find that very interesting because that's, it's a very different point of view than the most of the film industry, which is all about we must stop the pirates. Soderbergh is saying, "Well, we can't beat the pirates. We can't shut them down. Let's just start doing what they do. Let's start showing, start selling our DVDs the day the movie comes out. Why not?" And it's an interesting question, and we will see what will happen. Also, got news here: digital radio is coming out, where apparently, now this was crazy, this was like maybe a good decade ago, the FCC realized that there was more room in the radio spectrum than there currently is. Right now, if you want to listen to the radio, you know, you tune your radio to, you know, 100.7 or 99.3 or whatever. But, you know, it's a number from 88 to like 107, usually with one decimal place. And usually radio stations are, oh, let's say 0.4 megahertz apart. So you get a station at 91.9.1, your next station probably at 99.5, something like that. But that's because of the limits of the technology. You know, I don't know when they first made this popular for FM radio, but that was probably about as fine a discrimination as you could make with your receiver and still get the signal properly. Now they've got more high-tech receiver devices, and you could probably be getting signals, or, you know, you could probably get, instead of 99.1, you could probably get, you know, 99.9.03 or something crazy like that. So with this, when this came out, the FCC said, we're going to give out new frequencies. You know, we're going to have all this extra space. Now, instead of taking all this extra space, because I think they said you can fit about 10 times as many stations as you can, or 5 times as many stations as normal when you're using digital. Instead of using that and giving it to all sorts of new folks so there'd be more competition and variety in the radio market, they took the spectrum and said, okay, if you've got a frequency now, you can keep it. And now it's worth 10 times, it's now worth, you know, you now can fit 5 to 10 times as many stations in there, which was really frustrating. But now they're actually starting to make use of it. Clear Channel right now is finally putting out some of these things. Apparently you need a digital receiver and you would go to the old frequency, you'd go to, you know, 99.3, and then I guess you'd push a button at that point saying, you know, do you want channel 1, channel 2, or whatever on that frequency. It sounds like some of them, it's quite, you know, it's quite a variety. You know, you put it on channel 1, it's the rock station, but on channel 2, it's the country station, whatever. So I find that interesting. Now we've also got, this is the news about Google. Google is this really weird thing where it's, you know, the very popular search engine, and it just seems to sort of grow. It's, you know, it's very simple to use, very powerful, yet it doesn't have the hatred yet that people have for other big institutions like that, you know, Microsoft or an AOL. But the backlash is probably coming, especially as Google continually expands into other areas. But the Bush administration is trying to get Google to turn over all sorts of information about it, about user searches. In court papers filed in a U.S. district court in San Jose, Justice Department lawyers revealed that Google has refused to comply with a subpoena issued last year for records, which include a request for 1 million random web addresses and records of all Google searches from any 1 week period. Now, this has nothing to do with terrorism, this has nothing to do with national security. Apparently, in 2004, a superior court struck down a congressional law called the Child Online Protection Act, which was supposed to protect children from pornography. You know, because that's the big threat, kids seeing boobies. We can't have that, not in America. The Bush White House wants to get this, all this Google information as a way of trying to defend their struck-down law. They're trying to say, no, no, see, look at all the porn that you can get looking through Google. Here's proof that we need our censorship bill. But Google has refused to give up this information, possibly on First Amendment grounds, possibly because they want to use that information for their own financial purposes. I'm guessing the latter. But, yeah. And it's just so funny, this idea of having to protect children from pornography, especially. You know, they act like the internet is so bad with that. I was in junior high going to local bookstores. I'm looking at all the porn magazines. You know, I'd go in there, and you know, when the clerk wasn't looking, you snatch one off the shelf. You could walk over to another section of the library, and you know, look at all the naked ladies, or even there was there's usually a sex and relationships section in the bookstore. You go over there, you look for the book that might have something about sex, might have pictures, dirty stories, whatever. And where is the law against that? Congress asleep at the switch. Our children are seeing boobies, and we just can't be having that. Let's see what else we got here in media news. Oh, very interesting one here. The I need to find the name of the organization. Damn it. Lawsuit. There's a lawsuit by goddamn internet. Campaign for Commercial Free Childhood. And possibly other groups, but I'm scrolling through this article, not finding them. Anyhow, some advocacy groups here in the U.S. are suing Nickelodeon, the TV network, and the cable TV network, and Kellogg's Corporation, the company that makes breakfast cereals and all sorts of foods, saying that they are doing damage to kids by the way they advertise junk food to them. Now, it's very interesting. The plaintiffs are citing a recent report documenting the influence of marketing on what children eat. Ads aimed at kids are mostly for high-calorie, low-nutrition food and drinks, according to the government-chartered Institute of Medicine. Wakefield, Sherry Carlson says that she tries her best to get her three kids to eat healthy foods, but then they turn on Nickelodeon and see all these enticing junk food ads. Adding insult to injury, we enter the grocery store and see our beloved Nickelodeon characters plastered on all these junky snacks and cereals. Okay, I guess the organization... Okay, we've got... Sorry, I gotta jump back. Two organizations filing the lawsuit, the Center for Science and the Public Interest, and a Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood. Now, in Scandinavia, it's against the law to advertise to kids. And the reason that, the reason for this is that psychological studies have shown that kids haven't built up the sort of the logic and skepticism necessary to navigate commercials. If you ask a three-year-old or a five-year-old, why did we just see that commercial for Frosted Flakes, or you know, why would you see that advertisement for that toy? Kids literally think that the people on the TV are good-hearted people who just want to tell them about this great, tasty new cereal, or want to tell them about this fun new toy. Not that they're advertisers trying to convince them to buy these things with no concern for quality, no concern for the enjoyment or health of the child. Now, because children are so naive and susceptible to that, these other countries have said, fuck that. You cannot advertise to kids. It's a form of manipulation. But in the U.S., things are different. You know, we've got freedom of speech. We can go in and brainwash kids. It's okay. Yeah, that's all I'm going to say right now. That's this week's media news on Lying Media Bastards. And now we'll play some more music. Next up, I got a band called Camera Obscura. Or Camera Obscura. I'm not sure what dialect I'm supposed to be pronouncing that with. The song's called Books Written for Girls. And it's a nice track. Sort of slow and mellow, but very well done. So I'm going to put that on. And probably play some Trail of Dead later on, and maybe I'm gonna play a Coil song, like I said. Okay, I'll play the Coil song after this one. So I'm Jake, Lying Media Bastards Radio. Thanks for listening. That I wear. Hey, folks, listening to Radioactive San Diego. I'm Jake, Lying Media Bastards Radio Show. As I mentioned, I was going to play a song by Coil. I won't play that now. One of the founding members, a fellow named John Balance, died back in November 2004, and I just found out about it, so I felt I should play a song in homage, whatever. They had put out an album called Love's Secret Domain, which was really one of their most mainstream... Well, that's such a lie. one of their most listenable albums to people who were not steeped in experimental and industrial music. And this song, it's honestly sort of on the scarier side of music. You know, it's very dark and lots of yelling and creepiness and whatnot. But I think it's still a very good song. So this is Love's Secret Domain from Coil, from the album the same name. And, yeah, I'll be talking and playing some more music after that. Here we go.
Situations let loose and vision destroy. Blood suckle and honey suck. Oh, Rose, thou art sick. Oh, the vision of the void. The blood sickle. Cut. The honey. Suck. Rose, thou art sick. And little children's heavy heads. All in my bed. Innocence is dripping red. In dreams I'll walk with you. In dreams I'll talk with you. In dreams you're mine.
Coil doing Love Secret Domain, and the reason I do respect that band, one of them is basically they seem to be very into experimentation, not only with music, but with consciousness. They were enthusiasts of altered state, shall we say. And, you know, not only did they do the normal things of trying out hallucinogens and various other drugs. At one point I read about how they found this machine that emitted an enormous electromagnetic field that somebody had invented that allegedly you could stick your head into and it would do something to your perceptions or your thought patterns. And they tried that out as a way of experimenting with other altered states, various spiritual practices. And my favorite was they had talked about this drug they had taken, I believe, in India, which was a hallucinogen which was prepared with some extremely, extremely spicy food, you know, all sorts of peppers and whatnot. And the fella said, you know, that sure, they had this altered state when they took this stuff, but on top of that, he said, I don't think the importance of the peppers should be downplayed here. He seemed to think that if you ate something spicy enough, it would alter your consciousness. So I had to respect that. I thought it was very interesting. I wanted to talk a bit about the reform stuff going on in Congress. I talked a little bit on the show in the past about Jack Abramoff, the Washington lobbyist, who now is in big trouble because he was a lobbyist who was bribing congressmen. I know, such a thing is shocking to hear, but so now pretty much everybody in Congress is abruptly a reformist. They want to reform the lobbying process in the Congress, which really in a way is just so funny, because it's like it's made public that congressmen are corrupt. There's a number of congressmen who there's proof they were involved with illegal activity and corruption. So the only solution for this is for that body with the corrupt individuals in it. They need to come up with rules on how they can stop being corrupt. Instead of just saying, yeah, we're not going to be corrupt anymore, or we're going to get rid of the corrupt bastards, or, yeah, everybody does it. They're going to come up with new rules, new legislation. That'll fix everything. Now, my understanding is they've got only a few proposals have been made on what this reform means. One of them is that no longer will congressmen be able to take free meals from lobbyists. If a lobbyist tries to take you out to lunch, you say, no, sir, I can't do that. That's an abrogation of my duties as a corrupt congressman. And if they want to fly you somewhere on their private jet, you can't do that. You can't let them pay for your travel. And if they're going to give you gifts, you can't take those gifts. Now, of course, all of this, that's in the name of lobbying. If any of these lobbyists do this for fundraising, you know, if it's a lobbyist who's trying to help you raise money for your campaign, for example, they can, you know, you can't go in and they can't buy you dinner. But if they throw a dinner and call it a fundraiser, bam, free. If you can't take a trip that they pay for, but if you're going on a fundraising trip and they pay for it, huzzah, you're all good. The other proposals that I've seen to eliminate the lobbyist corruption are putting limits on earmarks, which I guess earmarks, we would call that, like most political would call it a pork barrel, or just pork. That's when a politician tries to take some government money and use it specifically for a project to make the voters in their home district happy. You know, it's, I want to build some schools, or we want a military base in our city, or something that'll generate money and jobs and that sort of thing. Apparently, you can take these earmarks and put them into any bill at pretty much any point before it's officially voted on, which means that there's probably a lot of congressional bills that get passed. You know, you're a congressman, you read it, you say, okay, I'm going to vote for that. You know, a week later, some dude sneaks in something saying, you know, we're going to buy lottery tickets for all my constituents, and you don't know that that's been inserted, and you vote for it, bam. And I guess often these pork projects and the earmarks are done at the behest of lobbyists. So that they're talking about limiting, and the revolving door, where you're a congressman, and you quit, and then you decide you get hired by a lobbying firm to lobby your former pals and colleagues, there used to be a limit of 1 year. If you quit, you had to wait a whole year before you could become a lobbyist. Now they're talking about making it so it's 2 years. Now the problem with this is that there is apparently more than 250 former members of Congress who are registered lobbyists. Now, I don't know how many unregistered lobbyists there are, or if that's a problem, but, you know, blah, blah, blah. And there's more than 2,000 former congressional staff members who are lobbyists. So really, sort of the people who are the congressmen, the people who used to be congressmen, the people who are lobbying the congressmen, are all kind of the same group. They all kind of hang out together and know each other and they're pals, and there's not a whole lot of barriers from switching to one to the other. But, and you know, it's all just ridiculous. One, because as I mentioned a second ago, if you say it's fundraising and not lobbying, then most of those rules don't apply. And, please, as if this was going to make a difference. I mean, to even have the modicum of democracy that we pretend to have, there can't be any of this stuff in there. You can't have any campaign money. You can't have any donations. You'd have to have, completely publicly financed elections where candidates were not allowed to spend their own money at all. That would be the only hope that you had of having clean elections. And then, even that, there's ways around it. We all know it. But, yeah. So, I'm tired. Played a bunch of stuff, did a lot of talking. What was I going to play next? I know. No, I don't want to play that now. Who do I want to play? Let us see. I'm not being a good radio guy at the moment. I know. I will play this Radiohead mashup thing. I will play... This is going to be Radiohead. There's a mashup Radiohead album called Me and This Army. I'm going to play the track Idiotech, or Idiotech Calisthenics, which will have Cut Chemist and Gift of Gab. And after that, I'll probably be just about done with this show. And then after that, I'll be doing an interview with one of the protesters from today's Divest from the Sudan event that took place at UCSD. So I'm Jake. Thanks for listening. Keep on listening for a little bit longer. And blah, blah, blah.
Calisthenics.
PZ, New Hampshire in the house. You know what I mean? Cut Chemist from Jurassic 5, 2004. Woo! In Rome. Red Bull Music Academy.
Listening to the Lying Media Bastards radio program. I'm Jake. I can't think of stuff to say. If you want to catch the rerun of this or read my political stuff, go to lyingmediabastards.com. Actually, please go there anyway. There's a couple things I didn't talk about today that I would like to speak on. I will put that in typed words on my site within the next day or so. Yeah, last song was Dramarama. And who did we have before that? We had the Radiohead mashup, and then that was it. Next week I'll try to play more music. I think that's what I will do. And do more talking. For the past few weeks I've been playing other people's stuff on here, and it cuts into the time for me. Me to talk. Me. I don't know what I'm doing. I will be talking shortly. I will try to find this protester guy and talk to him. But that will not be on this podcast. I'll put a link to it if I something. Wow, my brain doesn't work today. I'll see y'all next week.